Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we get started with today's show, I would like to thank our sponsors, the lovely folks over at Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search has offices in California and New York and offers premier professional recruiting services to a variety of corporations and law firms, both locally and internationally. So today on the show, we have with us David Ochi. David has over 25 years of experience in early stage companies. In fact, he even started his first enterprise, a tutoring company called A's Unlimited, at the age of 13. David ran this company for 11 years while attending high school, college, and graduate school. David utilized this experience to become an adjunct faculty member at the University of California, Irvine in 1999. David entered the world of technology in 2000 with the co-founding of Strivetta, LLC, a technology incubator. David originally campaigned successfully for two rounds of investment funding for the nine projects. And at its peak, David managed and supervised nine incubation teams comprised of 95 people. In 2004, David co-founded WebSonic LLC, a small business technology consulting firm focused on assisting small businesses to utilize technology in a strategic manner. With over 200 clients, David saw the marketing and finance operations and of the company and provided managerial consulting for clients. In 2006, when WebSonic was sold, David co-founded Alpha Sprouts, an early-stage consulting company. And in 2010, David founded what's now called Sunux Corporation, an innovator of sustainable energy solutions for private and municipal street lighting. David Ochi was the founding executive director of Antpreneur Center at UC Irvine and is the founding director of New Ventures at UCI Applied Innovation. He is also currently the Chief Strategic Officer at Convert Coal, a cutting-edge coal cleaning technology company based in the U.S., with initial market efforts in China, India, and throughout Europe. David Ochi sits on the board of directors of about a half a dozen companies and is actively involved in the growth of seven early-stage companies. David holds a BA in political science, a BS in biological science, and just in case you didn't feel not smart enough, an MBA from the University of California, Irvine. Additionally, David graduated from the Keller Graduate School of Management with a master's in project management. David, I have to say, that's a pretty overwhelming bio that you have there. It's pretty impressive. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. Education's not necessarily always everything it cracked up to be, but it was a good part of my life. That's for sure.
That's amazing. So tell me, it sounds like from when you were a very young man, you know, you created your first project, you know, at the age of 13 years old. Did you always envision yourself being an entrepreneur?
No, in fact, I became an entrepreneur, you know, kind of by accident. My mother had a friend. I was just about to be a freshman in high school. And my mother had a friend whose son needed help with math. So, you know, early on in the freshman year, I went over because my mom asked, helped Scott out. And at the end of an hour, Scott's mom came in and said, "Hey, how did it go, Scott?" And of course, he gave it a thumbs up. And I said, "Yeah, it was fun. It was math from last year, so it wasn't too bad." And he said, "Well, if you want to keep doing this, we're happy to do this. So, David, are you willing to come every week?" And I said, "I don't know. Ask my mom. I'm here because she asked me to be here." And she said, "Great. Well, we'll double check, but how much do I owe you?" And I gave her this blank stare and said, "Well, I don't know. I didn't want to get grounded. So mom said, come here. So I'm here." And she said, "No." And it was one of those lessons you don't realize until you're older. She said, "No, David, you need to learn that when you provide a service to somebody, you should be compensated for it. How's $5 an hour?" And I remember, you know, not even catching the first part of the sentence and instead going, $5 an hour, that's my entire weekly allowance in 1 hour. that's 168 times more efficient than my mom. Heck yeah, I'll come every week. You know, I'll even get my mom to drive me. Let's do this. And that started a tutoring company accidentally that spread down the street a few weeks later to another neighbor who needed help. And, you know, next thing you know, my freshman year, I was tutoring dozens of students in a variety of subjects. And I just carried that throughout all of high school, all of college, grad school. You know, so for 11 years total, I was tutoring or organizing groups to do tutoring. So I learned a ton about small business as a result, because it was, you know, I fell into it, and it certainly was a better paying opportunity than, you know, than just going and working at a fast food place or at movie theaters or something back in the day. So it really set a different tone for my career path without me really even knowing that that was what it was going to be.
So was it just an effortless transition then to go into opening your own company rather than going the 9-to-5 route once you did graduate from college?
Well, once I graduated, I mind you, I went straight into the MBA program. So, you know, it was during the dot-com days. So everyone was starting a company at that point. And if you could put dot-com in the name, you got funded, you know, almost instantaneously, and everyone's going to be a billionaire overnight. By the time I finished, you know, the dot-com boom was ending. We started Strepto when I was, after we had 9 weeks of the dot-com boom to enjoy. So it wasn't exactly the right timing. But I never even thought about going out and getting a job because I had always just started my own thing. You know, I did the tutoring, as a lot of kids do. I ran a t-shirt company that flopped horribly. I thought glow-in-the-dark t-shirts were going to be all the rave. And apparently we didn't have raves back then, so they weren't the rave. And so that was a bad experiment. But I did an international distribution company when I was in college. We were taking U.S. goods and going to the Philippines and South Africa with them because made in the USA meant a lot to those countries and the crowds there. So we saw a premium markup we could do and all this kind of thing. And I never, you know, most people there in college, towards the end of college, they start thinking about, you know, I should have done an internship or I need to work on my interview skills and that kind of thing. And those are certainly valuable skills and good things to do. But I had always had the mindset, if you want to go make money, go. Do a service for somebody or think of a product that would be valuable to people and go and sell it. And so I came from a very different background than most, where I didn't have parents who were pushing for me to get a career. They figured out that I was going to figure out how to make money on my own. And that's the way it's been, you know, almost ever since.
Yeah. And so let's talk about that for a minute. You know, I feel like maybe 10, 20, 30 years ago, it used to be our parents' job to make sure that they raised us, helped us to get an education, then kicked us out of the nest. And then our goal was to get this 9-to-5 career. How has the gig economy changed that?
It's continuing to make it even more of an antiquated model, right? I mean, the shift has happened and that shift is just accelerating and becoming more obvious. The gig economy gets a bad rap, I think, from many. I look at it and say that the gig economy allows people to explore things on their own terms. And a lot of people are afraid of the gig economy. There's not security. And, you know, I took this job at UCI almost 5 years ago now, and I feel less job security here than I did when I was self-employed. But if I needed more money, if I wanted to put a down payment on a house or I don't know, buy a car or go on a big trip or something, I knew that I could just go and find another client, work more time, work more hours, work, you know, increase margins, raise prices, whatever I wanted to do. I could control a lot of that. And once you get into a 9-to-5 paycheck driven type of mode, you know, you get what you get, but it's very slow moving. You know, in the academic world, you know, living adjustments, you know, cost of living adjustment type things in the 2-3% range, you know, are fought over. And I think, why would you do that? go get it something where you can sell one more client and now you got an extra 20 grand for the year. And that's that, you know, I think it's empowering to look at people in the gig economy, especially when you start thinking of it as a part-time side gig. That really, it really is empowering for people in my eyes. But there's comes with that a level of uncertainty, and people associate that with risk and downside and what ifs, and that's of course, but they, you know, there's an upside to it as well. There's a lot of freedom. You know, talk to even, you know, Uber or Lyft drivers, and you'll of course get the one that's upset that they're driving. But you talk to a lot, and they're pleased to be making, whether it's an extra $200 a month or making a full-time living off of it. It control, and they get to do what they want when they want. And to me, that's like a microcosm of what it would be like to be truly out self-employed beyond just being a, you know, a service provider for one particular company, but really being out on your own, deciding your own destiny. You know, people make a big deal, especially at, you know, programs like the Entrepreneur Center, that, you know, entrepreneurship is like the end goal. We want them to be entrepreneurs. And I tell them, that's not the purpose, right? The purpose is entrepreneurship is a tool. It's a mechanism by which you get to live your own destiny. You get to decide what you want to do. And entrepreneurship is just a set of mindset and skill sets that allow you to accomplish what you want. And whether that's for-profit or non-profit, or it's, you know, massively scalable business, or you just want a few extra bucks so that you don't, you know, you can pay off your student loan. It doesn't matter what it is. It's self-determining. And I think that's one of the most empowering natures of entrepreneurship. And that then is what fuels a lot of the gig economy.
Yeah, and I think something that a lot of people don't realize is that if you're in a position where, say, you're currently employed or you have the capacity to make up your own hours and be a part of the gig economy, there are so many pluses and upsides to having a company, at least right now, current tax laws as they stand. I'm not fully familiar with all the new tax laws that are coming out, but it gives you an opportunity to be able to write things off and to have certain things that are, you get a very high ROI, where you might not, as an employee, you just get your hourly rate wage, and that's all that you get. And then at the end of the day, you wind up paying whatever you pay in taxes, versus I think there's a lot more room to kind of think creatively about how to grow strategically your business and also make the most out of the tax laws that you get because you have a business, right?
Exactly. And sometimes, you know, obviously taxes are something you don't want to, yeah, there are some people in the world you don't want to really tick off, and the IRS. The state board is not, you know, those are not ones that you particularly like to get on the bad side of. I mean, just ask some political players in today's world, and they got recent cases about that, right? But the reality is, it's the opportunity that comes with it, right? I mean, imagine you're a sales rep for a big company, and you've got this nice job, and, you know, they give you a territory, and they run you around selling whatever the widget is or the service or whatever. And you see an opportunity that, you know, yeah, the widget that you're selling could really work, but gosh, it doesn't integrate with this other element of this company. Well, right now, as an employee, your job's to sell them the widget, maybe sell them two, or sell them the advanced widget instead of the regular widget. And maybe you'll get a little extra commission at best. And that's only really salespeople who get that kind of direct incentive, you know, on a sale. But what if you were instead a consultant with selling that same widget, but through a channel instead, where you're a channel partner selling on behalf of that company, but now you can add consulting services, or you can say, you know, it doesn't integrate with this other one. I can do that for you, or I can get the team that can do that for you and make a cut off of it. And what it allows you to do is find opportunities that go outside of purely your role and the role of the company, and turn them into opportunities for yourself and your own business and your own destiny, right? You decide what you want it to be. And if it's something where you say, gosh, that's a huge opportunity, but I can't stand this company, they're rude and terrible, and the office smells, or, you know, whatever the reason is, you just say no, right? Versus a boss who says, I don't care what the conditions are, go land that deal and make it happen. And, you know, you just deal with whatever you have to deal with. And it's really remarkable how much you don't necessarily see those opportunities, because you're bound. And you're so focused on whatever the boss is asking you to focus on, that the opportunities don't, you know, they start to blossom once you're outside of that paradigm. It's kind of like not knowing, you don't know what you don't know. And once you've left that paradigm and really explored, there's of course a fear factor to the change and the nuance of, what if I don't perform? You know, that's true. You know, I'm always looking, so if I don't perform, I don't deserve to get, right? I think that's a fair a way of looking at it. At the same time, if I do perform, I don't want to be under the thumb of somebody else saying that I don't deserve to get or keep my job, or we're changing the commission structure because you're making too much, you know, this kind of thing. You know, I deserve what I've earned, and whether it's in sales or it's in any aspect of a company, you know, even what we would think of as the most mundane level, there's always opportunity for growth, right? There's a famous Japanese concept of Kaizen, of incremental improvement. Those are all opportunities. And you can do it for your boss and for your company, and you can get a pin at 5 years and a pen at 10, and, you know, a plaque at 20. Or you can say, you know what, these little incremental improvements, I bet you we're not the only company who needs this. Could I build a product or service that goes out and does this? And what's great about the gig economy, going back to that, is you can do this sort of thing on the side, right? You can go and one of my favorite thoughts is millionaires aren't made from 9 to 5. They're made from 5 to 9. And so put some evenings and some weekends into something and just see what happens. And if you fail, you know, the great thing is you fail at your job, it's very likely that there's someone's going to yell and scream and write you up or fire you or, you know, whatever the consequence might be. If you fail in your startup, the amazing thing about the entrepreneur ecosystem is most people will high-five you. What happened? Oh, my gosh, battle wound. That sounds terrible. Well, what's your next? What are you working on? How can I help? It's a totally different culture when you jump into it. You realize that there's not a zero-sum game like you frequently find in corporations. It's an infinite game that if you're selling widgets and I'm selling wadgets, then, you know, I'm not stepping on your toes. You're not stepping on mine. And if I help you, that's great. If you help me, that's great. There's no, that you lack this sense of competition between entrepreneurs. It frequently is very supportive and collegial in that respect. So it's a good thing to try. I always recommend people give it a shot. You really won't disappoint yourself by giving it at least a try.
Yeah, and so let's talk for a minute, because I feel like your background is a little bit out of the box compared to a lot of the entrepreneurs I've interviewed or met with over the duration of my career. I found that a lot of entrepreneurs just don't go the route of education prior to becoming an entrepreneur. Many people fall into entrepreneurship straight out of high school or like you at a very early age and never pursue higher education. So could you tell me a little bit about what role Street Smarts plays into learning how to grow and develop a business and be an entrepreneur versus what role education played for you in particular with differentiating that?
Well, traditionally, education had nothing to do with entrepreneurship, right? We learned the Greek classics, and we learned how to write sentences with proper punctuation, and we would analyze social issues in political science or sociology classes, right? It was very detached from the real world. And academia is coming around. You're seeing that there are now thousands of entrepreneur programs around the country. I mean, I think the last count I saw was 1,200 entrepreneur programs at universities and colleges, and that, you know, most of them are under 5 or 8 years old. So they're not. It's a new thing. It's something that academia is figuring out we're going to have.
Oh, David, I think we lost you for a second. Hopefully, we'll get David back online here. David, if you can hear us. Hopefully you'll be able to call back in. Sometimes we do have technical difficulties, no matter how smart you are or where we are in the world. Sometimes our technology fails us. So David, if you can hear us, if you can just go ahead and call back into the show, or hopefully we'll be able to get you back online here in a moment. So David Ochi and I are discussing what it looks like to be an entrepreneur, and is that the right route to go? We've just been speaking about a gig economy and what role gig economy has played in giving people access to be entrepreneurs if, say, they haven't in the past. Say, 10 years ago, the resources that were available to test out having your own business have multiplied greatly. And what David and I just began to speak about was what is happening with respect to needing an education and what role does education actually play in entrepreneurship? So one thing to look at, I know that what David will speak about when we get him back online here, is the Entrepreneur Center at UC Irvine and some of the services that that offers. I remember when I was in college, I actually went to UC Irvine, which is how David Ochi and I had connected. And I remember not knowing the first thing about how to get a job, let alone open a business. So for anybody out there listening or tuning in and thinking to themselves, gosh, you know, this 9-to-5 thing is just not my cup of tea. It's just not really what matters to me, and I really would love a chance to eat what I kill, so to speak. That could be a great opportunity for you to look into what would it take for you to be an entrepreneur. With regards to people who want to create their own businesses. I was much like David. I created my first company when I was about 10 years old, I think, and it was a babysitting company. And I just remember in a very similar situation to David, he was doing it in a tutoring format, and I was doing it, just in my backyard, basically, and started taking on different clientele. That, for me, helped me to transition by the time I got my first job to eventually owning my own company for 9 years. And there is something to be said. It's very fulfilling to get to be the master of your own destiny. You know, when you're somebody out there, as David was mentioning earlier, where you have the opportunity, instead of capping yourself on how much money that person is going to make, to all of a sudden getting to make an unlimited amount of money and you're the one who's in control of it, you now have just gotten access to your destiny and to be able to take the reins basically to your life. So instead of just sitting in the back of a carriage with two horses going whatever direction that you want to go, that could be analogous, say perhaps, to having a 9-to-5 job. The horses are the 9-to-5 job and they're just going to take your carriage whatever direction it goes. But when you are somebody who owns your own company, you get to be the driver in the driver's seat directing what direction you want things to go. Now, this isn't to say that all 9-to-5 jobs are equal or the same, or that entrepreneurship is better or worse than having a 9-to-5 job. But what I love that David has been sharing is that having a 9-to-5 job doesn't have to be the only option. You could do both. You could have a hybrid career, as many people who are out there, you know, involved in the gig economy know. Some people want extra money to put towards their children's future or their families or perhaps towards their next vacation. And so having opportunities and options to do these sorts of things can be very helpful to get involved. While we're waiting for David to get back on the line here, another thing we could talk about entrepreneurship, for anybody out there who is perhaps they're in the midst of a career transition or they're looking at getting their first job out of college, one thing that you can do is interview other people who have the job that you want. So maybe you're toying around with it. Maybe you've been in a 9-to-5 job most of your career, and or you're about to get your first position out of school, and you're really just not sure what's next. A, you could do what David suggested and go and try one of the different types of jobs available in the gig economy. Or B, what you could also do is you could also go out and interview people who are entrepreneurs. See what you can find out from these people who have different roles, maybe in different industries that you're playing around with. And believe it or not, a lot of people out there who own companies might be willing to give you 5 minutes of their time over the phone, or perhaps they'll just answer a couple of questions for you via email. I think one of the things that's important to ourselves is to not limit our perspective. If we get attached to things being a certain way, that things should be one way as opposed to another way, then that's what could make a big difference, is to go ahead and, I'm going to see if we can get David back online, is to not be attached to, I have to have a 9-to-5 job, or I want to, create my own company. As David mentioned, his t-shirt company failed. I had my very first company that I opened, which was called Jay Hill's Career Consulting Services, before I opened my staffing firm, that was an epic failure. I had business flaws in there, as well as another company that I was one of the co-founders of called Viral Publicity. And I had many different obstacles and issues with those different companies, but it was a good learning experience. So David, I'm going to text David on the other line and see if we can get him back on air and see what's going on. But aside from that, when we're looking at entrepreneurship, I think one of the things is about shifting people's mindsets. I know one of the things that David had mentioned to me in our pre-show check-in call was that when students go to the Antpreneur program or one of the other 1,200 programs that David was just mentioning, let me see here. David, it looks like it's online. I'm trying to see. I just don't know why we can't hear David. Let me just make a note. Oh, David, did we get you back on?
I'm here. Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, it's okay. Technical difficulties. The sound of my own voice. Thank goodness I can fill up. airtime. But I think it would be better if you shared a little bit with our listeners, a little bit about the entrepreneur program at UC Irvine and some of the services. One of the things I was just starting to get into is, I think when you and I had spoken offline about this, you know, having like a college student, if somebody invests $600, that might seem like the world to them. But if you're investing what little money you might have once you graduate, then that seems like too risky of an endeavor to take. So tell our listeners a little bit about the program that the Entrepreneur Program offers and how you help people create real life strategies.
Yeah, so the Entrepreneur Center was born a little over 4 years ago at the campus of UC Irvine. And the genesis of it was that we wanted a safe harbor for students to come, especially undergrad, to come and just experiment with entrepreneurship. And we didn't care if it was for-profit, non-profit, highly scalable, or you know, just money for books. What really mattered was, are you willing and interested in tinkering with it? So we offered free private one-on-one coaching. So they had a place where they could come and say, I'm thinking about this idea. I have no idea how to do it. Help, help, help. And we could give them that guidance. And so that was really effective in drawing in, the crowd out that had started things or were curious about it or had watched Shark Tank and really fascinated and interested or whatever it might be. And that really was, that's done well. We had over 5,000 students in the 4 years that have come through and had some sort of help. In the process, the university has really put in a lot of effort into growing that. And the applied group called Applied Innovation was formed, and that's helping to transform the way we take intellectual property developed by the campus and get it out into the ecosystem and help, you know, take inventions from professors and really make them worthwhile. But it's slammed that together with the whole entrepreneurial ecosystem. And so really now we have this map that we lay out of all the different resources available to a student, staff, faculty, or alum from UC Irvine. And there's over 50 different programs, anything from 3D printing facilities and additive manufacturing to minors. At some point, there'll be here a master's in innovation and entrepreneurship. So there's a variety of things, incubation centers, meeting spaces, competitions, funding, and there's all sorts of avenues. And one of the keys is to not try to pigeon everyone into a particular kind of business, right? That classic model of an entrepreneur. It doesn't have to be a tech person. In fact, I am frequently tickled at the fact that we have more students who come from social science than we do from any other school on campus. And you would think business or engineering or computer science or something. And the reality is the social movement, people wanting to make an impact on the world and using entrepreneurship as a tool for that are very powerful. And so social entrepreneurship is a major endeavor, do quite a bit to try to foster that. So it's really about creating the right environment for them to be able to thrive, whether they're an undergrad, grad student, you know, faculty member, staff, or even alum that's been out for 30 years. It's about pulling them all together and giving them opportunities to work together and then connecting them with the whole entrepreneur ecosystem so that once they're comfortable and they're ready to go, maybe comfortable is not right the word because you're never quite comfortable, but once you're at a position where you really should be getting out and hitting the road and making things happen, it really, we allow you to do that and get payoff. And our job is just to help guide you to that, right? Get you the right connections and resources to be able to make that a reality.
So talk to us a little bit about what are the 15 competencies, or at least a couple of the competencies of an entrepreneur?
Yeah, so there's actually research. You can imagine that at a top-tier research institution, somebody went through and studied. But there are actually competencies that have been identified by academics for what it takes to be an entrepreneur. And, you know, some of them are what you think of, right? They're in common lore, right? Like having tenacity or perseverance. But sometimes you don't think of other things like the ability to maintain focus yet adapt, right? Like that's actually a real interesting competency. Is how do you not chase after every squirrel that you see, and yet when that one chasing of a squirrel is not quite right, when it's time to pivot is the term we would frequently use, or mitigating and managing risk is one that's done. And so there's a professor out in the University of Florida named Michael Morris who published about this in the academic world, but you don't see that again translate much into the popular press. But you know, resource leveraging and bootstrapping is a critical competency for many entrepreneurs, and So they taking things like that, recognizing and assessing opportunities. You know, we take it for granted as entrepreneurs because we just think that way. But if you have, you know, somebody coming in that has no exposure, maybe comes from a background where it's all about perfection on a test, and, you know, recognizing and assessing opportunities is something that a muscle they've had to work. And so they learn by experimenting with that. And we create all sorts of programming and opportunities for them to grow in these competencies. And experiment with them. The one that I find that I think is missing is actually managing uncertainty. You know, risk, famously, you know, we think of entrepreneurs as risk takers. In reality, some of the data is showing that serial entrepreneurs, right, the ones that do it inside and out all day long, they're actually more risk averse than the general population. What they are good at doing is distributing that risk and de-risking things, right? They get an investor to put the money in, so it's not their own nickel that's at risk. And they have somebody code it for free for some equity. Well, that means that they don't have that risk of hiring that coder. The risk is on the coder now. And, you know, so they find ways to de-risk things. And I find that to be very true. But uncertainty is different than risk. Risks you can calculate. What are the odds that this will happen or not happen? Uncertainty is where you're just in a blind territory. There's no historical data to look at. You know, in the entrepreneurial world, we would call it, you know, dealing with the blue ocean, right? The uncharted territory is where, well, we don't know how many people might want to swipe to do this or that. Like, there's no basis for it. That, to me, is the more fascinating one. You know, risk you can calculate and try to mitigate. Uncertainty is where entrepreneurs really thrive, is just jumping into a space that there is no precedent data to work from. You're just going to have to try to figure it out and make it work.
So how can somebody develop that quality of being, so I get the risk aversion, which is funny because everything I've ever heard is you would think that entrepreneurs would be more involved in risk as opposed to being risk averse, but how do you develop the characteristic of being comfortable with uncertainty? Are there any exercises that you do in the entrepreneurship program or that you would suggest to people out there who say, oh gosh, uncertainty sounds very scary to me?
Yeah, well, uncertainty is certainly for certain, pardon the pun, but is something that people aren't usually comfortable with, right? We like being in world, most of us like to be in worlds where the outcomes are fairly straightforward. There might be, think of it like a slot machine or in poker or something gambling related, right? You can calculate the risk roughly. What's really hard to do is think when you just don't know anything about, you know, like the what's going to be in there. The example I use in class frequently is I take a jar and I put 100 Hershey Kisses in it, right? It's a glass jar and everyone can see that there's 50 silver and there's 50 gold. And I said, okay, if you were to play a game, where if pick one, silver or gold, and if we pick that, you know, if it's the wrong color, the one you didn't choose, you make zero. If you pick the right one, you win $10,000, right? How much would you be willing to pay to play that game? Well, we can calculate an expected value calculation is what it's called, right? Where we say, oh, a 50% chance of getting $10,000, so $5,000 is what it's worth. Now, I'm not willing to pay quite that. Anything below that is a reasonable expectation. But if you take the exact same game and you take that same jar and you make it opaque or you cover it, you know, with a towel, and you say there are 100 Hershey Kisses in here and there could be 50 silver, 50 gold. It could be 100 silver and no gold, or 100 gold and no silver, or anything in between. You know, now how much are you willing to pay for this? Well, same game, you know, 10,000 if you're right, the numbers drop. And I found that they drop by about 40 to 50% in some small calculations based on random groups that I've done this with. And what I find is that drop is, you know, it's the same game. The difference is you just don't know what the risk is, right? You can't calculate it. One, you can say 50-50. The other, that's uncertain. You know there's 30 kisses and you know that you're going to get to draw one and that you get 10,000. But you have no way of basing your calculation because it's all under a towel, right? You can't see it under the towel. And that's uncertainty. And so we teach them, like, that's okay. And the natural inclination is to value it less because you're taking that on. And so risk is something that actuarians, you know, insurance companies do this all day long, right? They know the exact odds of you, you know, driving home today and being in a car accident, right? They know, they can calculate that based on history. the uncertainty, you can't. And so we allow them to experiment with uncertainty. So, for example, in one of my classes, I hand them a blank syllabus at the beginning of class. Well, and they freak out, of course. They're, you know, hyper top 10% of high school graduates or, you know, UCs. And they go, wait a minute, how do I get an A? I said, I don't know how you get an A. We have to figure out what we're going to learn first. What do you mean we have to figure that out? Well, that's uncertainty. We're going to learn something, you know that. But what we're going to learn is going to be based upon what you guys decide you want to learn about entrepreneurship. You tell me what you want to learn. And I'm under the same gun, right? I got to go and figure out how to teach it after they told me what to teach. And so it's breaking the mold like that. It puts me into an uncertain position, but I'm, of course, a little more comfortable with it than some. But, you know, for them, there are students who just simply, they need to sit at office hours and talk, okay, wait a minute, so exactly how do I get an A? And I say, I don't know how you get an A. Because I don't know what we're going to be doing in the class yet. But how can you not know? You're the professor. And I said, that's part of uncertainty. I'll be sure it's clear to you when it, you know, when we come up with it. But I can't tell you. I don't know yet. That's part of the learning objective for you, is to handle that and not know what to do with it. And so it's that, of course, freaks out many. And others, you can tell, it lights up their eyes. And those are the ones that are, you can tell there's a natural inclination and interest in, hey, I'm okay with that. Others, you know, they take a little coming around, but everyone can do it. People sometimes say, oh, you're born an entrepreneur, or there's people who have, you know, they just have the right traits. Everyone can learn how to be an entrepreneur. I'm a firm believer that if you are under the mindset of, well, you're born with it or you aren't, you know, Professor Dweck, I think if he's at Stanford, would say that you don't have a growth mindset and therefore you're locked in and you're not going to grow. Anyone can become an entrepreneur. You just have to experiment with it and see what works. And one of the best beauties about entrepreneurship, it's one of those few fields where we wear failure as a badge of honor. It's really almost awkward. You know, if somebody fails, like, for example, you don't get a job or a job interview, everyone goes, oh man, what'd you mess up? That sucks. You must be down. That's really, you know, I wonder how you can do, you recover from that. In entrepreneurship, we get curious, like, well, how did it go? What happened? Why didn't it work? Oh, yeah, that would be terrible. All right, well, what are you going to do next? I mean, now you know, now you learned. All right, now what's next? Right? And there's a whole lot of optimism that's embedded in that. And failure is just viewed as a growth opportunity. So
along that same line, David, when is a good time to join an entrepreneur program? Is it straight out of your bachelor's, after your bachelor's degree? Do you do it pre your bachelor's degree, after a master's degree, or at any point during your career? Is it a good time to take this or a similar program?
So the great thing is there's a variety of programs, especially at, you know, like UC Irvine. It's really trying we're really beginning to make an impact in the way entrepreneurship and innovation is viewed around the globe. You know, in terms of how a university can interface with that, there is no perfect time. That's one thing. And everyone keeps looking for, well, as soon as I have enough money in the bank, or wait, as soon as I'm married, or the kids are a certain age, or I need to first get my, you know, this lined up at work, and then I can tinker. I always recommend people just find something you thought you maybe would be interested in, and just get onto Google and start looking. What do you notice about people who are already doing it, or that are in a space? And we frequently say, start with a problem. Everyone experiences dozens to hundreds of things that annoy them throughout the day. And it could be as simple as, why is traffic always this way or that way, to, you know, the mundane, the silly sticker that's on fruit that you got to peel off every time. You know, it's just annoying. Isn't there a different way to do it? Can't we find a better way kind of mindset? And it's really, you know, find those problems and just start tinkering. And it can be an hour a week. It could be an hour. Right? You just as much as or as little as you want. And when you start reaching out to people that are in the entrepreneur space or can help you in that space, you start to see value and you realize, hey, wait a minute, this might actually work. Who do I need to talk to? And that's where that Entrepreneur Center service of giving a free, you know, private one-on-one consultation is so key. Because that crazy idea to you, sometimes you just need somebody telling you, well, it's not quite as crazy as you think. Why don't we explore that? But think of it as a science experiment. Let's create hypotheses about what makes you think will work or not work, and let's test them with the market. And so there really is no good time. The bad time is when you're dead. That's too late. But other than that, give it a shot.
I love it. Well, David, it's been a pleasure having you on. Are there any other points that you would love our listeners to walk away with from today's show, or anything that I didn't get a chance to ask you about entrepreneurship or entrepreneurship?
Well, regardless of whether you're at UCI or you're at any other university or an alum or a prospective alum or whatever it might be that you're thinking, the programs are out there. We have a program called the SBDC. We're one of 57. It's a small business administration program, so it's federally funded. We have one of 57 of them. That's open to the public. And if you fit, if you're interested in starting something, whether it's our SBDC or any number of them, that's a great start to find out, okay, what can and can't I get support from the government for, you know, and that's your taxpayer dollars at work. If you're own, if you're not part of UCI, we still welcome you to come and be a part of the ecosystem, and we can likely help in many ways. And then, of course, we can always refer and help get people to their own home universities, their own. It's a great way to get involved with your alma mater. If you go back to whatever the university is, I bet you'll be shocked. They probably have something entrepreneur on campus now. And it's a great way to engage the campus and be involved in your own alma mater. We're very open here to working with a variety of people. It's been really valuable in that respect. I think I would end with one major thing that, you know, I'm a big fan of the statement that whether you think you can or you can't, you're right. And so a lot of it has to do with your mindset. If you're willing to give it a shot, if you're willing to step up and give something a try, you'll usually be pleasantly surprised at what you can accomplish if you give it a little bit of effort. And of course, then, you know, we're big believers that if you got to start, you got to take one step forward. And so I recommend everybody have a chance to, you know, if you'd like, come to entrepreneur.uci.edu. We spell it with an A at the beginning, only because we're the anteaters here at UC Irvine. So entrepreneur.uci.edu, or another one is innovation.uci.edu. We're happy to help. And, of course, you can always look me up, David Ochi, O-C-H-I. Find me on LinkedIn and elsewhere. And I'm happy to connect and help anyone in any way I can. It's been a great having you, being a part of the program, though. I think I appreciate it.
Thank you, David. I think it's just so wonderful. I mean, there are so many things. Where were you when I opened my company and made a million failures 9 years ago? But, you know, it's so great that there are programs, like you said, that have just come out in the last 5 to 8 years that now people have tools and resources. So it doesn't have to be such a mystery. And you can learn from what other people, the people who have come before you. So I think that's why I wanted to have you on the show. I think it's just great information for some people out there. The 9 to 5 might not be for everybody. And it's not good or bad or right or wrong. This is just another tool to have in your belt, like you said. And that way you have access to choosing what you want rather than reacting to your circumstances.
Yeah, we say don't take a job, make a job.
Oh, I like that. Don't take a job, make a job. Well, on that note, thank you again for being here today, David, and joining us on the show. And for anybody who missed any portion of the show, or if you want to hear me ramble in the middle of the show when we lost David for a few minutes, you can always download the show after the show on Get Yourself the Job on the latalkradio.com webpage. And it's at the bottom of the show under the archive section. You can find all of our prior episodes there. Additionally, if you're more of a fan of iTunes or have an iPhone, you can also listen later in the week. The show will be available on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can subscribe, listen at your leisure, whatever is most convenient for you. And we do invite you to tune in next week on Labor Day. One of our favorite prior guests, Allison Garrido, who used to co-host the show with me a lot back when we first started 2 years ago, will be joining us to do a special show on networking. So thank you again to David and to everybody who tuned in today and who will listen to this show in the future. And we look forward to having you tune in next Monday at 4 p.m. Have a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.